He's different. It was a misunderstanding. The woman was actually his sister. I never understood why she couldn't see through the lies, but now I wonder if maybe she wanted to believe in love so badly that she convinced herself that her slimy boyfriend was telling the truth, just so she could have someone around. Of course you're going to deny it. What else are you going to say? I let out a shaky breath. Let's just forget this ever happened.
You really think I could forget this?
His voice is low, edgy.
You kissed me back. You still want me.
Don't flatter yourself. I would have kissed anyone just now. Did kiss anyone. Remember? If it was Wade here and not you, I'd be kissing him instead.
Reed frowns. Wade's a good guy. Don't break his heart to get back at me. That's not who you are.
You don't know who I am.
Yeah, I do.
You said it yourself.
I see you. I see your hurt and your loneliness. I see your pride and the way it stops you from leaning on anyone. I see your big heart and how you want to save the world, including an ass like me.
His voice catches.
I'm done playing games, Ella. No other girls exist in this world for me. If you see me talking to one, know that I'm talking about you. If you see me walking next to someone, I'm wishing it was you.
He steps toward me.
You're the only one for me.
I don't believe you.
How can I change your mind?
I push at him. He's standing way too close to me, and I need distance.
Do you want me to beg? Because I'll do that.
He starts to lower himself to the ground.
Dude, Royals whipped!
A loud voice crows. The comment is followed by a whip sound and lots of drunken laughter. A group of guys stumble past us on their way to the side of the mansion. I grab Reed before he can hit his knees. As much as I hate him, I hate the Aster kids more. But Reed doesn't seem bothered at all that these jerks overheard him. He just smirks and flips up his middle finger. Tears prick my eyes, and I avert my face so he can't see them.
I hate this place, I whisper. Aster is officially the stupidest school in the entire world.
Silence weighs heavy between us, until he sighs deeply.
Come on, I'll take you home.
Since my car is disgustingly out of commission, I slump into feet and climb into his SUV, but I make sure to sit as far away from him as possible.
What happened to your jersey?
He asks gruffly.
It's soaking wet.
Jordan happened. His hands tighten around the wheel.
I'll deal with her.
How?
You let me worry about that.
I stare out the window and shut down the flutters of hope that are trying to rise in my heart. This is Reed Royal. He's a guy who screwed his dad's girlfriend. He has no morals or principles. All he cares about is what he can get for himself. So no, I won't allow myself to hope. My heart can't take it. Not again.
Chapter 18. Reed. Winning my girl back is taking longer than I thought it would, and it's harder, too. I thought that the kiss at Shay's party signaled a change of heart. If anything, it ended up having the opposite effect. Ella still doesn't believe me, and short of a DNA test, I don't know how I'm going to convince her. Dad hasn't mentioned a paternity test, but he's got to be getting one, right? He can't tie himself to that snake without some kind of proof. I spent the entire miserable weekend getting ignored by everyone in the family except my dad and Brooke. Ella, Easton, the twins, Gid, they're all pissed at me. Don't get me wrong, I deserve it, 100%. Sleeping with Brooke was the stupidest decision I ever made. The fact that I've always been choosy as hell when it comes to chicks makes it even worse, because someone like Brooke shouldn't have made the short list. I should have resisted her. I should have resisted the urge to punish my dad. I know from experience that every boneheaded thing I do only ends with me punishing myself. But I did it, and I can't change that. I can hate myself for it, I can feel like shit every time I remember it, but I can't rewrite the past. And Ella can't hold it against me forever, right? You're staring, I turned to find Wade rolling his eyes at me. Yeah, busted. I was totally staring at Ella's table. She's sitting with Val on the opposite side of the dining hall, and I know she chose that spot on purpose. She's putting as much distance between us as humanly possible. And she positioned her chair so that her back is to the room. To me. She wants me to know it's over, but we both know it's not. She hated me before and still fell for me. Nothing's really changed between us. We're still sparring, still circling each other like well-matched opponents, but we're there, in the ring, together. And that's all that matters. I'm allowed to stare. I scowl at him. You, on the other hand, are not, so keep your eyes off my girl. Your lips, too. He just grins. Hey, it's not my fault she shoved her tongue in my mouth. I growl. Bring it up again and I'll lay you out. You never hurt your quarterback, Wade taunts, laughing as he rises from his chair. I'll catch you bros later. Got someone waiting for me in the bathroom. All the guys roll their eyes. Wade is notorious for his bathroom hookups. Hey, East, someone else says from the other end of the table. Heard you hooked up with Savannah Montgomery. I jolt upright. Seriously? First Abby and now Sav? When Abby pulled me aside at the party, it was to apologize for hooking up with East. She claimed she was mad at me and that it was her way of lashing out. It was hard to stop myself from saying, I don't give a damn who you screw. But it's true. I don't. I was over Abby even before Ella entered the picture, and I honestly don't care who she sleeps with. What I do care about is East. My brother's out of control and there's nothing I can do to stop it. That's what keeps me up at night. Well, that and Ella. Speaking of Ella, one of my teammates suddenly mentions her name. I drop any pretense that I'm not interested and turn to face the two football players who are gossiping like they're at a junior league luncheon. What about Ella? I demand. Sophomore O-lineman grimaces. Just heard she had a bad time of it in speech today. What happened? I fold my arms across my chest and glare at the two players. If they don't start talking, they're going to wear an imprint of their lunch trays on their faces. Neiman clears his throat. I wasn't there, but my sister's in her class. Said that Ella had to give a speech today about the people she looked up to or some shit. She wrote it about her mom and, He shifts uncomfortably. Spit it out. I'm not going to punch you for repeating what went on in class, but I might beat the crap out of you if you don't stop wasting my time. From the other side of the table, East is also listening intently, but he doesn't meet my eyes when I try to catch his gaze. Right. Okay, so I guess some kids were busting her ass, you know, saying shit like, I look up to strippers too, usually when they're grinding on my face. And my sister says one of the pastels asked if Ella had any home videos of her mom teaching her how to blow clients. I can feel my face grow darker and angrier at every word he says. I remind myself that he's just the messenger and I can't kill the messenger. Neiman's paler than a ghost by now. And then some girl told her that her mom died of shame because Ella's such a slut. I catch a flash of movement from the corner of my eye and turn to see Ella and Val making their way across the gleaming hardwood floor, empty trays in hand. I'm tempted to chase after her, but as much as I want to comfort her, I know she's not interested in hearing from me. Besides, comfort can only do so much. Wade was right. Something's got to change here at school. Before she left, no one but maybe Jordan would have dared to talk to Ella like that. I turn back to the guys. That it? I ask between gritted teeth. Neiman and his friend exchange a worried glance. No, that wasn't it, I guess. I brace myself for the rest. His friend picks up the story. When we were walking out, someone asked Daniel Delacorte if dollar bills fell out when Ella spread her legs for him. He said no, she's too cheap. Only quarters? I stick my fists on my knees because I'm afraid if I lose control I'm going to destroy this whole fucking school. Text your sister, I bark at Neiman. I want some names. Neiman has his phone out faster than when he lunges at an opposing defense that's after his quarterback. He taps out a quick message and we sit there for nearly a minute waiting for a response. By the time his phone beeps, I'm ready to murder someone. Skip Henley is the one who said the dollar bill thing. Neiman doesn't even finish the sentence before I'm on my feet. My peripheral vision shows East standing up too, but I hold up a hand to stop him. I've got this, I growl. Something, grudging respect, flickers through his eyes. Huh. Maybe my relationship with my brother isn't completely unsalvageable. I scan the dining hall until I find my target, Skip Henley. Kid's been on my radar for a while now. He's got a big mouth and likes to brag about the chicks he's hooked up with, in degrading detail. I stalk across the room toward Henley's table, which falls silent at my approach. Henley, I say coolly. Skip warily twists around. He looks preppy as hell with his perfectly gelled hair and clean-shaven pretty boy face. Yeah? You have speech before lunch? He nods. Yeah? So what? So here's the deal. I pat my chest. I'm gonna give you one shot. One free shot. Anywhere you like. And then I'm gonna beat you so bad, your own mother won't be able to recognize you. He looks around, frantic for an escape. But he's not getting past me, and whatever friends he once had pretend they don't know him. Everyone at their table averts their gazes, fiddles with their phones, picks at their food. Skip's on his own, and he knows it. I don't know what you think I did, he starts. But, oh, you need a reminder? Sure. Let me help you out, bro. You talk trash about Ella Harper. Panic flares briefly in his eyes, but then it hardens into indignation. He realizes he doesn't have many options, so he decides to double down on his stupidity. So what? He says again. I was just speaking the truth. We all know that your girl has spent so much time on her back she's got the word Sealy imprinted on her skin. I'm hauling him out of his chair before he can finish. My fingers bunch up the collar of his shirt, fisting the material as I bring his face close to mine. You've either got balls of steel or a death wish. My vote's on the second one. Fuck you! Henley shouts, his spittle flying toward my face. You think you run this school, Royal? You think you can bring some whore to our place and shove her down our throats? My great-granddaddy knew General Lee. I'm not going to associate with trash like her. Then he launches himself at me with a roar, and I let him take his shot. It's weak, like he is, like all bullies really are. That's why they're bullies, because they're insecure idiots who try to make themselves feel better. His fist glances off my jaw because he doesn't know how to throw a punch. Laughing, I grab the dickhead by the throat and drag him against me. Does your daddy not love you enough to teach you how to fight, Skippy? Watch. This is a jab. I punch his face twice in succession. You see how that works? I hear a loud snicker behind us and recognize it as Easton's. My brother is enjoying the show. Henley whimpers in pain and backs away from me. The smell of urine fills the air. Jesus Christ, he just pissed himself, someone yells. Disgusted, I grab Skip by the nape of his neck, kick his legs out from under him, and slam him face first on the ground. My knee digs into his spine as I bend my head toward him. You say one word to Ella or any of her friends, and I'll do a lot worse to you than a couple jabs to the face, you got me? He nods, weeping pitifully. Good. I shove him as I get to my feet. That goes for the rest of you, I announce to the crowd. You're all going to clean up your acts starting today, or what happened to this jackass will look like a fucking tea party. The entire dining hall is dead silent, and the nervous, fearful eyes I see all around bring me a wave of satisfaction. Wade was right about another thing. These kids need a leader, someone to stop them from devouring each other. I might not have applied for the job, but it's mine, whether I like it or not. Instead of going to class, I head for the men's room on the first floor near the gym. There's no stated rule that this bathroom is solely for the football team, but it's worked out that way. And Wade makes good use of it. He has government this period, and since his mom started sleeping with the teacher, he hasn't stepped one foot into the classroom. He says after all the carbs at lunch, it's either sleep or screw, and the latter's more fun. I make a production as I enter to alert the occupants that they're not alone, but it doesn't affect Wade at all. I hear breathy moans, interspersed with, "Yes, Wade, please, Wade," chanted out in a familiar rhythm. Bored, I lean against the sinks and watch the closed door to one of the stalls rattle noisily as Wade starts giving it to her hard. From the sound of the voice, I'm guessing his post-lunch hookup is with Rachel Cohen. Wade has the attention span of a peanut, but when he's with a girl, he gives it his all. You can't ask for more than that. I check my watch. I don't want to miss next period. I pound on the door. Almost done, kids? The noise pauses, and I hear a muffled cry of surprise along with a hushed reassurance. I got you, babe. A rustling, and then... There you go. Feels good, don't it? Don't worry about old Reed out there. Ah, you like that. You want me to open the door? No? Okay, but he's out there. He can hear you. Damn, you like that a lot. Yeah, babe, let go. A soft moan escapes, and there's more shuffling followed by a long, low groan. The finale is signaled by the sound of a toilet flushing. The door opens, and I catch Wade's eyes and tap on my watch. He gives me a nod and finishes zipping his pants, then pulls Rachel in his arms and gives her a wet, noisy kiss. Damn, babe, that was spectacular. She sighs against him. I recognize that sound. Heard a similar one from Ella when we fooled around. I'm dying to hear it again, and it pisses me off a little that she's not letting me in. I clear my throat loudly. Wade half walks, half carries Rachel over to the door.
I'll see you after class?
She asks with hope in her eyes. You bet, babe. He pauses and then looks over his shoulder at me. I shake my head no. He shrugs as if to say doesn't hurt to ask. I'll be over after dinner. Keep this hot for me, okay? He pats the front of her shortened uniform skirt. I'll be thinking of you all afternoon. It's gonna be a rough time. Even after all these years with Wade, I can't tell if he's sincere or just that smooth.
You mean a hard time?
She coos. Okay, that's enough. Wade, I say impatiently. I'll see you, Rach. I've got to confab with Reed here, or I promised we'd be going another round. She hesitates, and Wade has to physically push her out the door. After it shuts, he shoves the waste can in front of it and saunters over. I turn the faucets on to prevent little ears from listening in. I get straight to the point. Ella's car was honey-bombed on Friday night at the Montgomery's party, and I just threw down with some asshole who crucified her during speech. What the hell is going on? Seriously? Did you not hear a word I said to you the last time we talked about this? Actually, you did, and you said you didn't care. He says pointedly. Well, now I care. I want to know why Ella is a target again. Everyone knows I'm willing to give a beating to anyone who looks sideways at her, so I don't understand why she's being jacked around. Wade sticks his hands under the faucet and washes them, taking his own sweet time before answering. Wade, I warn. Okay, don't hit me. He holds up his hands. Look at this pretty face. He pats his chin. There'll be no more Rachels in the bathroom if this kisser gets ruined. I stare down at Wade, who's 2 inches shorter than me. Why are people messing with Ella? I press. He shrugs. People used to be terrified of you. Now, not so much. What's that supposed to mean? It means Delacorte still has all his teeth and he tried to rape your girl. Jordan says what she wants and there's no repercussions. Everyone thinks you're done with Ella, and since you stopped standing up for people, they aren't going to return the favor. Ella's fair game. Anything else? Wade shrugs ruefully. Isn't that enough? I nod in frustration. Yeah, it's plenty. You gonna do anything about it? What do you think? I nudge the wastebasket away from the door. I think if you royals stood as a united front, then everyone would just chill. No one really likes what's happening here, but everyone's scared or lazy. And frankly, buddy, you fall into the latter category. I clench my teeth tight, but he's not wrong. Gideon was a way more active enforcer at school than I am. He paid attention. He figured out who was behind shit and made sure they fell in line. Usually I was the one delivering the messages. After he left, everyone assumed I was in charge, and I didn't do much to prove if they were right or wrong. Until now. I twist to face him. You're right. I've been a lazy asshole. Wade grins. I'm always right. So what are you going to do about it? Not sure yet. But don't worry. Shit's going to change. I give him a deadly look. I'm on it.
Chapter 19. Ella. I get home from school and make a beeline for my room, where I throw myself on the bed and curl up on my side. I just want to pretend that this entire day from hell never happened. Every time I think I can't feel any more humiliated, the jerks at Astor Park Prep prove me wrong. I won't cry, though. Nope, not shedding a single tear. I'm not giving them that kind of power over me. Still,
Speech class sucked on a whole new level. The slurs against my mom were almost too much for me to handle. I can't believe the teacher stood there like a dummy for 5 minutes before shutting the class down. Maybe I should have gone over to Val's like she'd wanted me to. We could have sat on her bed eating ice cream and gossiping about her new crush, which suddenly sounds a lot better than sulking in my room all night. Plus, I wouldn't be tensing up every time I hear footsteps in the hall. I can't believe I kissed Reed the other night. No, I more than kissed him. He had my pants down and his hands on my butt. Who knows how much further I would have let him go if the whole baby thing hadn't popped up between us. What if he's actually the father of Brooke's baby? How can I ever live in the same house as Reed and Brooke and their secret baby that poor Callum will be unknowingly raising as his own? God, when did my life become such a soap opera? I squeeze my face tightly between both my palms until I can feel my teeth press against my cheek. That pain doesn't make the one in my heart go away. I miss Reed. I'm angry at myself for it, but I can't stop it either. All that stuff I told him about how I thought he saw me, I still feel that way. Reed fixes those intense blue eyes on me, and it's like he can see into my soul. He sees past the tough front I hide behind. He sees my fears and my vulnerability, and he doesn't judge me for it. And I honestly believed I could see him, too. Was I imagining it? Those moments of laughter when we both let our guards down. That raw look in his eyes when he told me he wished he could be worthy. The peaceful sensation that washed over me when we fell asleep together. Was it all in my imagination? I grab my math book out of my backpack and force myself to concentrate. Afterward, I treat myself by watching 2 mindless episodes of The Bachelor, but it's no fun when Val isn't sitting beside me, making wisecracks about the contestants.
Ella?
Callum's voice sounds from the hall, followed by a sharp knock on my door.
Dinner's ready. You need to come down.
I'm not hungry. I call back.
Come down, he repeats. We have guests.
I frown at the door. Callum's not usually super parental with me, but right now, his tone is stern and fatherly.
We're eating on the patio,
he adds, and then I hear him knocking on other doors and gathering the troops. He's personally collecting each one of us, and he sounds a bit worried. I sit up warily, wondering who our guests are. Brooke, obviously, because that witch has been over almost every night since she and Callum dropped their baby bomb. But who else? As far as I know, Callum's only friend was Steve, and he's dead. Sighing, I heave myself off the mattress and quickly change out of my school uniform into something more dinner appropriate. Unfortunately, I keep forgetting to go shopping, so I'm stuck wearing one of the dresses from my shopping spree with Brooke. I walk into the hall at the same time Reed and Easton are leaving their rooms. I ignore them both, and they ignore each other, and it's a silent, stony trudge down the stairs. When we step onto the patio, I immediately understand why Callum was worried. We have 2 dinner guests, Brooke and Dinah O'Halloran. Beside me, Reed's entire body stiffens. His blue eyes shift from one blonde bitch to the other.
What's the occasion?
He asks coolly. Brooke offers us a broad smile.
Celebrating the engagement, silly.
She flips her hair over her shoulder.
Unofficially, of course, because there'll be a proper engagement party once we get the details squared away. Somewhere decadent like the palace, or maybe the King Edward? What do you think, Dinah? Do we want a modern venue or someplace more distinguished?
Dinah lifts her nose in distaste. The King Edward Hotel has lost its appeal, Brookie. It used to be far more exclusive, but now that they've reduced their rates, the clientele is much lower class.
Callum glances at me and the boys.
Sit, he commands. You're being rude.
I scan the available seats.
Brooke and Dinah are on either side of Callum, while Sawyer and Sebastian, both wearing sullen expressions, lucked out with seats on the opposite end of the table. Reed and Easton bypass the empty chairs near the women and flop down beside the twins. This leaves me with two not-so-appealing options, but I decide Dinah is the lesser of two bitches and reluctantly take the seat next to hers. I get situated, just as Gideon stalks through the French doors.
"Evening," he mutters.
Callum nods in approval.
"I'm glad you were able to make it, Gid."
There's an edge in his voice. Gideon's tone is even sharper.
"Because you really left me much of a choice, right, Dad?"
His jaw ticks when he realizes the only available seat is next to Brooke, his future stepmother. She pats the chair.
"Come sit, darling. Let me pour you a glass of wine."
"I'll have water," he says tightly.
An awkward silence falls over the table once we're all settled. Every single royal boy is sporting a deep scowl. Callum watches them, looking disappointed.
What did he expect, though?
His sons have barely spoken to him since the baby announcement. I've seen the twins cringe every time Brooke flashes her shiny diamond around. Easton's drunk more often than he's sober. Gideon apparently needs to be bullied into coming home. And Reed slept with Callum's girlfriend 2 or 3 or 100 times. So yeah, Callum's out of his mind if he thinks this big happy family dinner will be anything other than a total disaster.
"Thank you so much for inviting me tonight," Dinah chirps to Callum. "It's been ages since I visited the royal palace."
The bite to her words reveals exactly how she feels about the lack of invitations rolling her way. She looks beautiful tonight, despite the venom in her green eyes. Her golden hair is swept up, and two diamond earrings dangle from her earlobes. She's wearing a white dress with a deep-cut V that shows off both her tan and her cleavage.
"I can see why my father was drawn to her. Dinah looks like a sexy angel. I wonder how long it took him to realize she was actually the devil."
Callum must have hired caterers for this dinner because three uniformed women I don't recognize sashay onto the patio and begin serving us. It makes me feel awkward, and I have to pin myself to the chair so I don't jump up and help them. Then the nine of us settle in to eat. Is the food delicious? I have no idea. I don't pay attention to what I'm shoving into my mouth. If anything, I'm trying not to throw up. Brooke is gabbing away about the new royal baby, and it's making me sick.
"If it's a boy, I'd like his middle name to be Emerson, after Callum's father, God rest his soul,"
Brooke is telling Dinah.
"Don't you think that has a nice ring to it? Callum Emerson Royal the Second."
She's planning on naming the baby Callum? Why not Reed, I want to crack. Then I clench my fingers around my water glass, because the thought of Reed actually being this kid's biological dad is rage-inducing and nauseating and just plain awful. Reed claims that the last time he was with Brooke was more than 6 months ago, and she's definitely not that far along. So maybe they didn't have sex the night I walked in on them. He says they didn't. Brooke says they didn't. Maybe they're telling the truth?
"Yes, Ella, and Mom's last boyfriend was totally holding hands with his sister. Idiot."
"Ella?"
I lift my head and find Callum eyeing me.
"Sorry, what?"
"Brooke asked you a question," he prompts.
I reluctantly glance at Brooke, who winks at me.
"I asked if you had any suggestions for girls' names."
"No," I mutter. "Sorry, I'm bad with names."
"Boys?" she asks the royals. "Any ideas?"
Not a single one of them answers. The twins pretend they're too focused on stuffing their faces, but Reed, Gideon, and Easton flat out ignore her. Since I'm the only one who contributed to the conversation, if you can call 6 measly words a contribution, I quickly become the focus of the adults.
"I'm disappointed that you don't visit the penthouse more often," Dinah tells me. "I'd really like to get to know my husband's daughter."
She says daughter as if it's a dirty word.
Callum's features tighten, but his mouth remains firmly shut. I haven't been invited. I strive for an equally cool tone. Dinah's gaze darkens. You don't need an invitation, she answers sweetly. The penthouse is half yours, remember? I guess. At my cloudy expression, she shrugs and turns to Gideon. How's college, darling? It's been ages since I've seen you. Tell me everything you've been up to.
College is fun,
he says curtly. You have a swim meet coming up, no? Dinah runs her fingers over the stem of her glass. I think Brooke might have mentioned it. A muscle in his jaw flexes before he answers.
Yes, that's right.
Brooke speaks up, her eyes twinkling. Maybe we should all drive up to cheer him on. What do you think, Callum?
Yes, that sounds great.
Reed snorts quietly. Callum throws a warning glance in his direction. I pretty much hate everyone at the table right now. The tension thickens and thickens until I feel like the walls are closing in on me and I'm suffocating from the inside out. And we're outdoors, damn it. I wish you'd gotten to know your father, Dinah says. Steve was such a formidable man. And loyal. So very loyal. Right, Callum? Callum nods and pours himself another glass of wine. I'm pretty sure he's on his second bottle. Brooke, meanwhile, is drinking sparkling water because of the pregnancy.
Best man I ever knew, Callum says thickly.
Not very good at managing his money, though, Dinah remarks. Her green eyes narrow at me for a moment. Do you take after your mother or father, Ella?
My mother,
I answer tersely, because how the hell would I know? Of course you have to say that, she muses. After all, Steve didn't know about you. You literally did not exist for him for most of your life. Nice, subtle job there, Dinah. But you know what? I grew up around catty women who were constantly afraid that their one asset, their looks, was quickly fading. I can take whatever she dishes out. I smile. He came around. I mean, he did leave me everything he could. And he would have left me more if you didn't have a boatload of lawyers making sure every loose penny fell into your purse. Her answering smile is full of teeth. I was thinking about you the other day. Please don't. And how much alike we are. My mother wasn't well when I was young, and we moved around as much as you did. She made poor life decisions. There were often... She pauses and takes a sip of her drink. Against all of our wills, we're listening to every word, and she clearly revels in the attention. Often people that drifted in and out of my life that weren't always the best sort of influence. Sometimes these men wanted things from me that a child should never be asked to give. Dinah looks at me expectantly. I guess she's like one of those old-timey southern preachers who needs affirmation to make sure their message is getting through. That's too bad, I mutter. She's right, though. Her story is similar to my own past, but I refuse to feel sorry for her. Her life is a far cry from that now. It is, isn't it? She dabs the side of her mouth with a napkin. I'd love to give you some advice, from one lost girl to another. You don't need to wait for what you want in life, because if you do, you'll end up like our mothers, used and ultimately dead. And I'm sure you don't want that, do you, Ella? Callum sets his fork against the table with more force than necessary.
I don't think this is appropriate dinner conversation.
Dinah waves a dismissive hand. It's girl talk, Callum. I'm giving Ella some of my hard-won wisdom, and warning me that she's going to try to take everything Steve left me. Is this the plot of some Lifetime movie? Easton interjects before I can respond, because I blocked that channel on my TV.
Sainsy, Sawyer says. Where's the dessert?
Well, if we're bored of my life story and Ella's, how about we talk about you boys? I know Easton and the twins like to play the field. What about you two? Reed? Gideon? Are you boys seeing anyone special? Or breaking hearts like your little brothers? She gives a teasing laugh.
Nobody else joins in. We're both single. Gideon grinds out. That gets Brooke's attention. She twirls a strand of hair around her finger, shooting me an impish look, as the waitstaff carts out our desserts.
And you, Ella? Found that special someone yet?
Callum is eyeing me too now. It figures this would be the moment he decides to take his drunken face out of his wine bottle. I lower my head to my dessert, as if the tiramisu on my plate is the most interesting thing I've ever seen. No, I'm not seeing anyone. There's another lull in the conversation. I scarf down my cake as quickly as I can, and I notice from the corner of my eye that all the royal boys are doing the same. Gideon beats us all, dropping his fork on his empty plate and scraping his chair back.
I need to make a phone call.
His father frowns.
We're about to serve coffee. Don't want any,
Gid mumbles. He hightails it off the patio as if he can't get away fast enough. Reed opens his mouth to speak, but Callum silences him with a look.
You're not going anywhere, it says.
And Reed angrily slumps back in his seat. The catering staff comes out with trays of fancy pants lattes featuring actual designs created out of the foam. Mine's a leaf. Brooks is a tree, but should have been a pitchfork.
Excuse me, Dinah says as the coffee is served. I need to use the little girl's room.
Reed catches my gaze and we both roll our eyes. And I instantly regret the moment of camaraderie, because it brings a pleased half-smile to his lips. This time it's Easton and I who beat out the brothers, slurping our lattes back in record time. We slam our cups down and speak at the same time.
I'll help the caterers with these dishes. I'll take in this tray.
We glare at each other for a moment, but our mutual need to flee inspires another bonding moment.
Ella and I will take care of this, Easton finishes,
and I nod in gratitude. Callum is quick to protest.
The waitstaff is perfectly capable of...
But Easton and I are already gathering up random plates and cups. As we hurry toward the French doors, I hear Reed's grumble of annoyance tickling my back.
Great minds think alike, Easton murmurs.
I flash him a quick scowl. Oh, so now we're friends again? His expression flickers with guilt. When we reach the kitchen, he sets the plates in the sink, glances discreetly at the catering staff, and lowers his voice.
I'm sorry about what I said at Sav's party. I was wasted.
You're not allowed to use that as an excuse, I retort. You're always wasted, and you've never said anything like that to me before. His cheeks redden.
I'm sorry. I'm an asshole.
Yup.
Forgive me.
He dons his trademark little boy look that usually makes people melt. But I'm not letting him off the hook that easily. The comment he'd made the other night was mean and hurtful. So I shake my head at him and walk out of the kitchen.
Ella, come on, wait.
He catches up to me in the hall and takes hold of my arm.
You know I say stupid shit without thinking.
My face heats up. You pretty much told everyone at that party that I'm a slut, Easton. He moans.
I know. I messed up, okay? You know I don't think that about you.
His features crease.
I like you. You're my baby sis. Please don't be mad at me.
Before I can respond, a soft noise snags my attention. It sounded like a groan. Or maybe a sigh. I glance toward the end of the hall. There are only three rooms in this section of the house. A small powder room, the walk-in pantry, and a closet.
Did you hear that?
I ask Easton. He nods grimly. Something compels me to creep farther down the corridor. I pause in front of the pantry, but I don't hear anything behind the door. Same with the closet. The bathroom, though. Easton and I both freeze when we hear the moan. It's a woman from the sound of it. My blood runs cold. Because there are six females in the royal mansion right now, and five of them are accounted for. Brooks on the patio,
The waitresses are in the kitchen, and I'm right here. Which means... I turn to Easton with wide eyes, suddenly feeling sick to my stomach. He must have put two and two together, because his mouth falls open slightly.
Easton?
I hiss when he reaches for the doorknob. He holds the index finger of his free hand to his mouth. Then, to my horror, he turns the knob and eases the door open about an inch. An inch is all we need. An inch is plenty for us to catch a glimpse of the couple inside the bathroom. Dinah's blonde head, Gid's dark one, his hands digging into her hips, her body arching toward him. With disgust in his eyes, Easton soundlessly closes the bathroom door and stumbles backward as if he was just slapped in the face. In unspoken agreement, we don't say a word until we're a safe distance away.
Oh my God, I whisper in horror. What the hell is Gideon?
Easton clamps a hand over my mouth.
Shut up, he says in a low voice. We didn't see anything. You got it.
His hand is trembling as it drops away. He gives me one last punishing look, then spins on his heel and disappears into the foyer. A few seconds later, the front door slams. Chapter 20. The phone rings at midnight. I'm not asleep. When I close my eyes, all I can see is Gideon and Dinah's heads and his hands on her ass. It's too close to how I picture Brooke and Reed, and I wonder if that's where Reed got his stupid idea in the first place. I stretch my arm out and grab the phone off the nightstand. The display shows Val's pursed lips blowing me a kiss.
Hey girl, what's up?
I whisper into the phone. Silence greets me. I sit up.
Val?
After a shuddering breath and a half-sob, I hear,
Ella, it's me, Val.
I know. I saw your name on my phone. What's wrong? Where are you? I'm out of bed and pulling on my leggings as I wait for her response.
South Industrial Boulevard outside some warehouse. There's a rave.
What happened? Do you need a ride?
Yeah. I'm sorry to call you.
She sounds miserable.
I caught a ride out here because I heard Tam was in town, but I couldn't find him. My ride took off, and it's a bad scene.
I sigh, but offer no judgment. After all, wasn't I kissing Reed just a few nights ago? I'm so ashamed of it that I haven't even been able to confess this to my best friend. I'll be there as soon as I can, I promise. She starts to say something, and then stops.
What?
I ask, grabbing my keys off the dresser.
It's just... this is a rough place. You might want to bring someone with you.
Does she mean Reed?
Yeah, right. I'd cut off my leg before asking him for help.
I'll check if Easton's home.
Good. I'll wait for you here.
I find my shoes, throw open my door, and grind to a halt when I see Reed slumped against the wall. The door strikes the wall before I can catch it, and the sharp sound jerks him out of his sleep. Hooded eyes take in my clothes, bag, and keys.
Where are we going?
He drawls, instantly alert.
I'm going to get something to eat.
As lies go, that one sucks, but I'm sticking with it. Easton around? I ask casually. Maybe he's hungry.
Reed pushes to his feet.
He might be. You'll have to call him, though, because last I heard he was going out for drinks with Wade and the guys.
Damn. Why aren't you there? And why are you lurking outside my room like a creeper? He shoots me a look of disbelief.
Isn't it obvious?
I shut my mouth because it is obvious, but more importantly, I'm afraid if I open my mouth again, a whole slew of questions will fall out. Like how long has he been doing this? And is it because he's afraid I'm going to run away? Or because he just wants to be as close as possible to me? I'm even more afraid of the answers. And I have Val to pick up, so I turn and head downstairs. Wordlessly, Reed follows me. He's my silent shadow, across the grand foyer and its giant chandelier, past the dining room that's never used, and into the kitchen, where I once sat on Reed's lap, wishing I was having him for breakfast, instead of whatever dish Sandra had created. Go upstairs, Reed. I don't need you.
Whose wheels are you taking?
I stop short, and he nearly steps on the back of my feet. Oh. My honey, glitter, and ant-infested car is undrivable, I realize. I'd parked it in the garage that I've never seen Callum use, because I needed time to find a place that could clean it, and I had no idea how to explain the mess to Callum in the meantime. He reaches over and plucks my now useless car keys out of my hand and pockets them.
Come on, I've got you.
Val's warning that I should bring someone tickles my conscience, but I don't want to ask Reed for anything. Can't I just borrow your car?
First, it's not a car. It's an SUV. Second, no.
I don't have time to argue. Val needs me. And apparently, I need Reed. But I don't have to be gracious about it, so I huff an angry sigh and stomp into the mudroom, grabbing the first jacket I can find. The minute I zip it up, I realize it's Reed's. Great. Now my nose is filled with his scent. Fine, but when we get there, you have to stay in the car. He grunts his response, which could either be agreement or, I'm not going to argue with you until I have you in the car.
So where are we going?
He asks as I buckle in. I give him the address, and he slides me a wry look in return.
I didn't realize the wharf was the only place to get fast food at 2 a.m.
Heard it was the best in town, I answer airily.
You and I both know that you aren't going out to pick up food. Want to tell me what's going on?
Not particularly, no. I expect him to shoot back some retort, like, my car, my rules. But instead, he remains silent. His fingers flex around the steering wheel, squeezing the leather-wrapped circle. He's probably imagining it's my neck, and that if he squeezes tight enough, I'll eventually spill my guts and say, "Oh gosh, Reed, I don't care that you screwed your daddy's girlfriend and maybe got her pregnant. Come inside my bedroom and take my virginity." Well, if he even still wants my V-card. I mean, yeah, he says he wants me, but what does that mean? Is it just a matter of pride for him? A girl who turns him down is a prick to his ego, so he pursues her to build his image back up? It's not like I can rely on my instincts anymore. After all, I let Reed in, even when he was being an asshole to me. I definitely can't trust him now that he's being nice. I should have listened to him when he told me to stay away, but I was lonely and stupid, and there was something in him that called to me. I thought... I don't know what I thought. Maybe my estrogen levels were super high and I got caught up in some kind of hormonal episode. Or maybe it's just how I'm wired. I spent my whole life watching my mom make one bad decision after the other when it came to men. Is it really a surprise that I'm doing the same thing? Reed reaches across the console to squeeze my knee.
You're gonna hurt your brain thinking that hard.
His touch makes my pulse speed up. So I move my knee away to dislodge his hand. He gets the message and returns his grip to the steering wheel. While I stare at the dashboard, trying to squash the regret that fills me. My problem isn't that I'm thinking too hard. It's that I'm not thinking enough, I mumble.
You don't have problems, Ella. Not the way you think you do. You're fine the way you are.
The compliment sends a warm rush to my belly. Sweet, nice Reed. Is more potent and dangerous than asshole Reed. I can't deal with this right now. I'm tired and my defenses are low. Don't be nice to me. That's not who you are. To my surprise, Reed laughs. It's not a hearty one, and it's tinged with a shade of bitterness, but it's still a laugh.
I don't know who I am anymore. I think I'm lost. I think my brothers are lost too.
My heart flips. Oh no. Vulnerable Reed is even more dangerous. I scramble for a subject change. Is that what's wrong with Easton?
If I knew what's up with East, I wouldn't be going with you in the middle of the night to haul him out of whatever trouble he's in. So if you have some ideas on how to fix him, please, I'm all ears.
We're not rescuing Easton right now, I admit.
And if you want ideas about how to help him, ask someone else. I don't have the first clue what's going on with him. All I know is that Easton told me once he has addiction issues. He misses his mother desperately, loves his brothers, and is sickened by what he saw in the bathroom tonight. It's on the tip of my tongue to ask Reed about it, if he knows. But as with so many other things that go on in that household, I feel the less I know, the better. I don't think he likes to be left out, I offer reluctantly. There's the twins, and there's you and Gideon. Maybe he feels like he doesn't belong. I know that feeling, and it might explain why Easton was so upset at seeing Gideon and Dinah together. Why he's hooking up with Abby and Savannah. Why he's drinking and smoking himself senseless. Maybe he's trying to get a closer sense of his brothers, and doing it in his own special, messed-up Easton way. Reed grunts.
I guess I've never thought of it that way.
He taps his fingers on the steering wheel, and then abruptly changes the subject.
You haven't told my dad about your car yet.
How do you know I haven't?
Because he'd be stomping around the house and making 1,000 phone calls. And your ant-infested car wouldn't be stashed in the garage, where Dad can't see it.
I've been calling around to find a place that will clean it up.
I'll take care of it.
Any response I might have is cut short by the scene we pull up to. Cars are peeling out of a parking lot, and we hear the faint wail of sirens in the distance. When Reed slows down, I jerk open the door and hop out. Hitting the ground running, I yell, Val? Val, where are you? A slender figure separates itself from a straggly bush lining the sidewalk and throws itself at me.
Oh my God, I thought you'd never get here,
Val sobs in my ear. I pull back to see a bruise forming beside her left eye and a red mark on her forehead. What happened? I exclaim.
I'll tell you in the car. Please, let's go.
Of course. I wrap my arm around her. But when we start for the car, Val stumbles, nearly taking me with her. Reed appears at my side and lifts Val into his arms. He nods toward the car.
Let's go.
This time I don't hesitate to listen to him. The sirens are getting closer, and there are people jostling us, running around, racing away. Reed hurries to his Rover. While I hold open the car door, he slides Val into the back seat. I climb in after her. As Reed jumps into the driver's seat.
Don't take me home. Please, I can't deal with Jordan tonight.
Val whimpers. Of course not. You can stay with me. Reed gives me a nod that he's heard me, and he takes off, heading north toward home.
Who did this to you, Val? He demands. I'm gonna kick his ass.
Val leans her head back against the seat. She's exhausted, emotionally and physically. You don't have to talk about it. I rub my hand down her bare arm. Her cute outfit, a crop top and embroidered shorts, looks intact. I don't see any signs of injury other than the ones on her face. It's fine. She gives me a sad smile. I ran into an ex of Tam's. We got into a ridiculous fight, so if you're gonna kick someone's ass, it'll be mine. She closes her eyes. And silent tears rain down her face. I slide over and wrap one arm around her, holding her close for the rest of the drive. When we get home, I help her up to the bedroom and she collapses on my bed. I pull her shoes off, strip off her shorts and top, and grab a bottle of water from my fridge. She takes it with a grateful smile. Do you want Astro football or this old Iron Man t-shirt? She looks pointedly at the football t-shirt, but gestures to the other one. Iron Man, please. I toss her Iron Man, glad she doesn't ask why I still have one of Reed's old workout shirts. My answer would be that it's comfortable. I mean, it really is comfortable, but anyone with half a brain would guess I've kept it for other reasons. Val slips under the covers just as Reed appears with a pill bottle.
Valium.
He says, walking through the door I'd left open. I don't ask why he has a prescription for it. I just shake out one pill and give it to Val.
You two need anything else?
No thanks, I answer.
He shifts from one foot to the other, and then reluctantly leaves. Val falls asleep almost immediately, but I'm too wired to crash. I curl up next to her, and just lie there for a while, until a noise in the hall captures my attention. Careful not to wake my friend, I creep across the room and crack the door open. Sure enough, Reed is settling down outside my door.
Go to bed, I hiss.
He opens one eye.
I am in bed.
There's no bed in the hall.
Don't need one.
Fine. I start to slam the door, but remember Val at the last second. The door closes with a soft snick, and I lean against it, forcing myself to remember how I don't love him, how he was cruel to me, how I spent my weeks away tormented with visions of him and Brooke together, and wanting to just curl up and die, but instead getting up every morning to hustle and find work. And now he's sitting outside my door, trying to make me believe he's changed. I wrench open the door again and stomp out. Why are you here? The words come out like a plea rather than an accusation. Reed stands up. He's wearing a black wife beater and track pants that ride low on his hips, and his biceps flex when he reaches for me.
You know why.
The fire in his eyes simultaneously turns me on and fuels my anger.
Don't touch me.
He lets his arm drop, and I hate the disappointment that I feel. Get it together, Ella.
Fine, he rasps. You do the touching.
My eyes widen as he starts tearing off his clothes right there in the hall. Naked Reed, with his rippling chest and his rock-hard thighs, and that thin line of hair that arrows down to his waistband. No, no, no! Put this back on, I order, throwing his shirt back in his face.
No.
He snatches it out of the air and tosses it aside. And then he pulls me against him. Every inch of him is hard. Every inch. I expect another hot, frantic makeout, like the one in Savannah's driveway, but Reed surprises me. His touch is gentle, as he skims his fingers over my cheek. His breathing thins, and then those fingers tenderly slide through my hair, angling my head perfectly for his kiss. It's the sweetest kiss we've ever shared. Slow, soft, the feather-light brush of his lips, the tentative swirl of his tongue. I can feel him shaking, but I don't know if it's because he's nervous, or excited, or both. I scream at myself to move, to push him away. If I call for help, maybe he'll stop kissing me like I'm the single most important person in his world. But I don't do any of that. My stupid body melts against his, my stupid lips part for him. Take what he can give you, and then send him on his way, a little voice whispers. Use him. Isn't that a convenient excuse? But in the haze of my growing need, I give in a tiny inch, and Reed takes full advantage, hoisting me up and carrying me to his bedroom. He kicks his door shut behind him and lowers me onto his mattress.
I missed you,
he whispers, and I open my eyes to find that his are shining with emotion.
Tell me you missed me too.
I swallow the words before they can leave my mouth. The disappointment on his face fades quickly.
It's okay. You don't have to tell me. You can show me.
His hand leaves my hair and moves between my legs, and when his fingers curl up, I can't stop from rocking my hips. He grunts in pleasure against my mouth and rubs that aching spot, making me whimper. I hate that he still has power over me. I hate that I no longer feel in control over anything. I hate that I'm here, that my mom is gone, that I fell for Reed in the first place. Tears start trickling out, sliding down to where our mouths meet.
Are you crying?
Reed abruptly breaks away from me. I can't stop myself from gripping him tighter. It's like some part of me is saying that I've had too much loss in my life,
so I might as well hang on to the scraps Reed Royal is willing to give me. But I can't stop crying either.